This is the Goalkeeper Roundtable, hosted by Dr. Bill Steffen, with co-hosts Jeff Shook, Dave LaTourette, and George Costellis. Welcome back to the Goalkeeper Roundtable. In episode 14, we welcome a special guest to the table. Internationally renowned goalkeeping educator and coach, Dan Gaspar. A Hall of Famer at a variety of levels, Dan has international experience at the highest levels, working with Portugal and Iran at the 2010 and 2014 World Cups, respectively. He continues to own and operate Star Goalkeeping Academy and has worked at every level imaginable in the game. The best thing about Dan is his continuous and obvious passion for the position of goalkeeping and the great game of football. Oh, and you will see that passion arise in our conversation. We apologize for a little bit of audio difficulty we had in this episode, but we know you will thoroughly enjoy the two-part conversation because we wish we could have kept going. Let's dive into this legendary conversation with Dr. Bill, GK, Shooky, Lotto, and the Silver Fox.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, whatever time it is, whatever. Welcome to the Goalkeeper Roundtable. We are excited today to have Dan Gaspar, who's, we were just joking about, you know, his resume. If we went through his resume, it would take the better part of the show. So I've left Lotto to do that in the introduction. But Dan, welcome. Welcome. We're glad you're here with us.
Well, it's my pleasure to participate in this Goalkeeping Roundtable podcast with such notable goalkeeper coaches, all of whom I respect and admire, and really looking forward to just discussing the art of goalkeeping with professionals like yourself.
Okay, good, Dan. You keep very current with goalkeeping. So I think one of the things we've talked about it with a, we try and kind of like, I've asked the same question kind of all of our guests kind of. What kind of, if you were a young goalkeeper coach, or if you could speak to all the young goalkeeper coaches out there that are coaching youth goalkeepers, what would you emphasize that you perhaps don't see being done enough or has changed or has evolved or should change or evolve? But if you could have a word with all the young goalkeeper coaches out there, what would you tell them to work on with their young charges?
Well, that's such a wide open question. But first of all, what I'd like to do is just start by saying that you can't do it alone. Anybody's achievements or success, you need to be surrounded by quality people, professionals who care for you, who share their wisdom and knowledge with you, who allow you to grow and learn and to gain confidence by the opportunities they present. And that's basically, you know, been my career. I've been blessed, and anytime I speak, it's really a tribute to them. So humility, I think, is a characteristic that I think is extremely important. You know, I started very early knowing that I loved the game. I took a brutal self-inventory of myself. My dad, my mentor, my best friend, my best goalkeeper coach wanted me to be a professional goalkeeper just like him. And I was ahead of my times in terms of the love for the position in the U.S. My dad was a very technical coach, so I was very technically refined. My knowledge was enhanced by the international experiences that he exposed me to. But I realized, and I came to a brutal self-inventory of the fact that, okay, I could maybe be a third MLS keeper, maybe be a number two in USL, maybe be a number one in a semi-professional team, but none of those scenarios would provide me with the lifestyle and the economic benefits that I wanted to present for my family. So after accepting that, what was my next step? My passion was goalkeeping. What can I do to share my unique experiences and try to make a difference in the art of goalkeeping, trying to get involved in the education aspects? So I started the Star Goalkeeper Academy. But first, I was co-founder with Tony Chico of Soccer Plus, as many of you know. And then now I'm currently the founder of Star Goalkeeper Academy. And through those vehicles, through those platforms, I was able to share my expertise with, you know, thousands of goalkeepers and coaches. So I think education is truly important. I went out and got my licenses from U.S. Soccer, as well as the NCAA, now currently known as USC. And then from there, my career just blossomed through discipline, through sacrifice. There's a lot of sacrifice, especially to the loved ones, to your family, to your friends. There's a lot of things that you miss as a result of being so passionate about what you do. So education, I think, is a real key. Having humility, surrounding yourself with quality people, always learning, always growing, despite the number of years that I've been involved as a goalkeeper, coach, and educator. I'm learning every single day. I try to wake up. I try to learn a new word, a new activity, embrace something new that enhances, you know, my overall experience.
Good, good. I think that's great, because that can apply to so many people that are in an educational or coaching kind of role. Jeff, did you have something you wanted to...
Yeah, Dan. So my first recollection of you and coming across you is when you were doing goalkeeping camps decades ago, and then you got involved in the international game. And now that I see your social media all the time doing all these goalkeeping camps, very similar to what you were doing when I first came across you. Are you finding the level of goalkeeping similar as when you started? Is it a higher tier? And are the demands of the players being placed upon you for expectations different?
It's a great question. And thank you for reminding me that it was decades ago.
Yeah, Danny, it was for all of us.
But, you know, the position has evolved, no question about it. It's much more advanced. During my time, back in the 90s, you know, I considered myself rather innovative and creative. I was doing tennis balls, resistant cords, sandpit training, strobe light training, you name it. I always tried to stay away from the routine, still achieving the goals and the tasks of skill development, but in a creative way. Training goalkeepers on an isolated basis, separate from the team, has its potential. You know, there's mental training, there's education of training ethics, warm up, cool down, reducing the size of the goal. But for the goalkeeper to fully maximize their development, they clearly need to be engaged with the team, and there needs to be synergy. You know, the back pass training, the first line of attack, the being a student of the game, the coordination and cooperation between the head coach and the goalkeeper coach. Training reflecting whatever the head coach's theme is for that day. As good as goalkeeper coaches we like to think we are, we all know who the best goalkeeper coach is. And that's the game. And so as a result, training has shifted, and has shifted in some good directions. You know, social media, the YouTube provides incredible amount of information out there for anyone to just get on their laptop or computer and seek and search. But I encourage goalkeepers, coaches, to take a time out, step away from your computer, look at the game globally. Don't just be dependent upon social media and the internet. Be creative, challenge your own self, your own mind, learn and grow from others, I think is really, really important. And, you know, with the youth development as an example, you know, I got a call the other day, and I'm doing private lessons, group lessons, and a mother called me, and she, you know, she sounded very informed. She said, you know, my son is challenging with making decisions. I don't see the same confidence level that he has in training than he does in a game. Distribution needs to be more accurate, more efficient, and all things that I agree with. And then I asked, how old is the goalkeeper? And she told me he was 9 years old. Yeah. And I took a pause. I took a pause and respectfully, you know, added some suggestions and advice, but I don't want to be training a 9-year-old specifically specialize in goalkeeping. Yeah. With the modern game, we all know, first, we're all soccer players. You know, goalkeeping, yes, is unique, special. They have their unique skill set, but they have to be just as confident with their feet as they do with their hands, and they have to be a student of the game. So, you know, when does that specialization occur? That's difficult to say. I mean, certainly in the early teens, they're probably trying to decide what pathway they want to succeed. But I always tell my goalkeepers, their experience on the field is going to enhance their goalkeeping ability. Them being a student of the game, being responsible to be an integral part of the team in terms of its tactics and distribution. So we've come a long way, and I'm happy to see that. There are some trends that I'm concerned about, and I don't know if you'd like me to get into that.
Danny, you and I had a brief discussion on the phone about that, so I'd like to venture into that when time comes today. Okay. In that podcast, about some of the trends that you and I both agreed that need some attention or direction.
I know George had a question, but I'm just gonna make a quick I think the point's excellent, because again, one of the biggest things in my own development as a goalkeeper was playing in the field more, to start to read the game. And when I would work with college goalkeepers, I spend most of my time asking, well, what did you think was going to happen because of where this player was? What did you think was going to go? What was going to happen? And reading the game and understanding the game as a player, not just as I sit back here and wait until I'm called on. I think that that's a big part of it. And that touches alongside exactly what you just said about the game, understanding the game. George had a question for you.
Yeah, Danny, we go way back. So, I mean, you know, to the Tony and Danny days over at the small Soccer Plus store in Farmington, actually. I mean, I was a youngster then, so I'm dating myself. But at the same time, Danny, you bring up some awesome points in regards to being a student of the game, your network. So I'd like to know, who were some of your earlier influences? Who were some of your mentors? I mean, for me, you know, it's obviously the likes of you and Tony and so on, and Lotto being my goalkeeper coach. So I wanted to see where maybe you gathered your influences from.
You know, George, between Joe Matchnick, the former Tony DiCicco, me and you, it's unbelievable that we even give up a goal here in the state of Connecticut. I mean, we should be getting shutouts. The state of Connecticut should be a state that doesn't concede any goals.
It's all those guys in front of you, man. It's all those guys in front of you.
Max's fault.
First and foremost, my dad, as I mentioned earlier, my best mentor, my best friend, my best goalkeeper coach. He passed away not too long ago, but I lost him many years ago, George. And what I mean by that is, as you know, Colts Park, where we've trained often in Hartford, my dad used to come down there with a bag of balls, put them at the penalty spot, old school training, volleyballs, and I would just, you know, shot block. Prior to that, he took me to New London Ocean Beach, nice sand, so I could learn how to fall. It was horrible, 90 degree temperature, sand sticking to my lips, the lifeguard security, the circle of people surrounding my dad, you know, thinking that there's abuse going on here. And, you know, Dad, can I have a drink of water? No, keep working. You know, you do that today and forget about it. You know, the liabilities are immense. So first and foremost, my dad, who taught me to love the game and to love life. Secondly, it goes to Dr. Joe Matchnick. When I realized that I wasn't going to be a big-time star, a big-time soccer goalkeeper, and professional soccer is only good for the top tier, not for all professionals, but for that top elite. And he had his goalkeeper school in Loomis Chafee. I was his first staff member, along with Roy Massine, Peter, forgot his name.
Peter Carley.
Yeah, Rick Kessel, and Shep Messing, Roy Messing. And I began to see the impact that he had, his teachings, on the goalkeepers that attended his camp and on the staff. I mean, we were disciples. We would follow him anywhere. We would do anything that he said. It was an incredible environment. And I realized back then that, you know what? I can do this as well. and make it my livelihood. And then I went to Hartford City Radiator, downtown Hartford. Tony DiCicco was under a hood of a car and changing a radiator, because that's what his dad did. That was the business that his dad had. And I, young guy, went and, you know, and I admired Tony because he played for the Greek Hellenic, as you remember, George, and the Rhode Island Oceaneers. And I would stand by his goal, and I was so impressed with his level of communication and distribution. He could throw the ball extremely well because he was a former baseball player.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what, maybe I should combine my efforts with Tony. And so I went to the radiator shop. He was under the hood, and I said, look, I got this idea, and I believe in specialization eliminates competition. Let's start a soccer retail store, and then we can expand into a goalkeeping camp, and then we could, you know, do a mail order catalog. And as always, Tony wanted to defer to Diane to see what her opinion was.
Smart man.
and then he came back. He says, let's do this. And I was working for U.S. Electrical Motors in Milford, Connecticut, selling motors. I knew nothing about motors, nothing about that. So I went on unemployment in order to establish this business. And Tony, being the conservative guy that he is, he said, look, you kick it off and I'll join you when the business can generate enough income to pay both of our salaries. And that happened shortly after that. And then from him, I learned discipline, you know, teaching mentality, his balance to juggle family, peers, and the passion that he had for the art of goalkeeping. So those were the mentors for me, George. It was my dad, it was Dr. Joe Matchnick, and then Tony DiCicco.
Claro, go ahead.
Yeah, first off, Dan, really happy to have you, first off. And I said this to you probably a year or so ago when we were communicating, and I want to talk about mentorship a little bit. And I was able to go to a Joe Matchnick camp, and I was young, enjoyed that, and was challenged immensely. And then worked for Tony. Hold on a second, guys.
You guys hear me okay?
Yes. Yeah. Better now.
Yeah, okay. Worked for Tony and had that influence and that mentorship. But you were the one that we had conversations, but I never had a really chance to work with you and learn from you. So I'm learning from you today, first off. But with regards to mentorship, I think one of the biggest things we can do as coaches is have great mentors, and you mentioned that. But I want to relate this back to Joe Matchnick's camp, Tony's camps, your camps. For young coaches out there that are goalkeepers, how do you think that they can use that environment, that, say, working for you at one of your camps or at another camp? We don't have many camps anymore, specific goalkeeper camps, because that was really my start, and it was total immersion, and I learned so much in that. So speak to the younger goalkeepers out there, the younger coaches out there, and how they can help improve themselves as opposed to watching YouTube or maybe just working with a single coach.
Yeah. I mean, you got to get in the arena. You know, there's no better place that I feel more comfort and that I feel is paradise than on the pitch and in a goal. And I think we've been very blessed at SGA, because the biggest joy that I receive is when others grow and achieve their dreams and they set out a mission and they're able to accomplish it. Oftentimes I like to do that internally, former students who now become staff members. And I would encourage any young goalkeeper who wants to learn the craft, and first of all and foremost, have an open mind. I took a bit and a piece of everybody that I've read about or been associated with, including you guys. And then I try to twist it a little bit and add my personality to it. So at SGA, there's a huge focus on the technical aspect of it. So I think that's really a strong foundation for youth development. I think that's really important, teaching a proper technique so that it adds consistency in performance and reduces the number of injuries. I think also in my methods, I'm very much in favor of the goalkeeper dance, rhythm training, being able to have good motor skills and good foot skills that are related to the demands of the goalkeeper's movement. So I've created a number of stations that reflect those types of movements, which I think are extremely important. I believe dance is big, it's small, it's fast, it's slow. I believe preparing for a match depends on the rhythm of the opposition, and then that determines the way you want to train. So if you're playing against a team that's very direct, there's no sugar and spice in it, they're just, you know, flighting balls, driven balls, and obviously you have to prepare your goalkeeper for those conditions, and vice versa. If the team is, you know, a South American type of style of skill set, you know, that has a lot of flair and can handle the reduced spaces, then you have to have a different direction and how, and a different preparation of how you prepare your goalkeeper for that rhythm of that game. So it's not always the same routine. You know, it's based on the teams that you're going to be faced. I think camps are not the answer for all the aspects. It doesn't duplicate the conditions of the game unless you combine your efforts. Years ago, what we did, Soccer Plus and Tony DiCicco and myself, is we combined with Hubert Vogelsinger soccer camps. And that gave us, because nobody knew Tony back then, nobody knew Dan back then, but I knew that there was two of us and only one Joe Majdnik. So we can work twice as fast and twice as hard. And we traveled the country and people, as a result of the quality of work, people began to appreciate what we were offering until we outgrew that arena where we got more goalkeepers than Hubert Vogelsinger wanted, and it started to dominate the camp. But to this day, I believe that was the best training environment because we had our curriculum, we had the specific themes we wanted to work on, and then no better place on the same day than have competitive games in order for them to apply what they've learned. So I think that's a very valuable component if you can find that mix. And then Tony went on with Soccer Plus with a post to post, as you guys know, to create that similar type of environment.
Yeah, I think that's a valuable point. And obviously, goalkeeping requires some specialization in terms of the instruction and the content. But I think it also benefits from having the application, which is what you described, having some immediate application of it.
But I'd like to add, and I'd like to interject here as well, Bill, and I think absolutely, as we all agree, that training the goalkeeper in game-like conditions is absolutely essential to maximize their total performance. But don't think for a minute that you can do that at every level. There's no way I'm going to work with Carlos Queiroz, one of the greatest coaches, head coaches in the world, who's currently with Colombia nationally, who gave me a great number of opportunities. If I'm in the middle of a tactical session that he's conducting, and now I step on the pitch and I begin to add my goal, it doesn't work that way, guys.
No, it doesn't.
We got to be careful. We have to be careful. Yes, it's important, but depending on the level that you're coaching, depending on the relationship you have with that head coach, waiting for the right time. You know, a national team goalkeeper, you're not going to be critiquing him in front of the entire team, including the head coach. He does his job. He comes out. You know, you're talking about, in my case, the opportunity that I've had working with millionaires. You know, there's a delicate process. Doesn't mean that you can't teach. Doesn't mean that you can't guide them to where you want them to go, but you can't push them. You can do that at younger levels, you know, at the high school level, a lot of the collegiate level, but not all colleges. So, you know, we have to proportion that out properly and realistically.
Yeah, I think of, you know, when I would work with very good level of college goalkeeper, I became more of a goalkeeper whisperer, where we'd have these conversations, but it would be much more discreet and kind of what you described, having that.
I was fortunate because the head coaches that I worked with, in particular, Carlos Queiroz, which is most of my professional career, we had a relationship on the field and off the field. Mm-hmm. So we had time to have these discussions and to debate, not publicly, not in front of the players, not in front of the administrators, but privately until we reached a conclusion. And you know, as a goalkeeper coach, you have to be flexible. You have to be adaptable. There's going to be moments where you have a plan and all of a sudden, you know, the head coach decides as a result of his numbers or his spacing or the lack of equipment or the weather conditions or coming off of a defeat or coming off of a victory, you have to adjust. And that's where the experience comes in.
True, true. Jeff, did you have something?
Yeah, Dan, so with your time over in Europe, do you have any thoughts or ideas on why the American goalkeeper is no longer so coveted by the top leagues there as it was in the 90s and early 2000s?
Yeah. Wow. We had such a magical generation. You know, with Brad Friedel and Tony Meola and Tim Howard, Nick Raimundo,
Casey Keller,
you know, and others. I mean, that was magical. We had goalkeepers that were on top of their game in the peak of their career, all maturing at the same time. I'm concerned about the next generation, my friends. I don't see that depth. I'm disappointed in U.S. soccer. I don't need to be politically correct any longer in my stage of my career. It's not about resume building for me anymore. It's about telling the truth based on my experiences. Number one, U.S. American goalkeeper coaches and educators are the best in the world. I can say that because I've worked in massive clubs with massive national teams. And I've seen international goalkeeper coaches, and with all due respect, the only difference is it's one thing to say you're a goalkeeper coach of, you know, of a professional team here versus a goalkeeper coach of Man U or Barcelona. It's the club that projects that goalkeeper coach. We don't have that here. We don't have that significant club, internationally respected, that people overseas are going to say, wow. But we do have great educators here. Our goalkeeper coaches are intelligent, educated, you know, in terms of going most of them through the collegiate process. They are not only goalkeeper educators, they're marketers, they're promoters, trying to sell the game, trying to educate the game, because our culture doesn't do that at the same level as overseas. So I am concerned. I think USC is doing a marvelous job. They've picked that up. But at the end of the day, it's U.S. soccer that's sanctioned by FIFA, that is sanctioned to provide licensing courses, that's internationally accepted. It becomes also their responsibility. I think we got too casual. I think we relaxed. We took it for granted that our goalkeepers are just born, that they're not trained, they're not developed. And as a result, who, since that generation has ended or expired, who has stepped forward, the one or two goalkeepers that you can confidently say, that's our role model. That's our keeper. Yeah. The scouting network is very lacking. There's no vertical integration. Now the men's national team and the women's national team now have goalkeeper directors, only now, which is great. But who's overseeing the entire program? Who's providing the scouting language so that everybody's on the same page? Who's providing our goalkeeper profile? Who's establishing the goalkeeper role models? Who's out there shaking the bushes to find where they are? You know, it's a mystery to me, and it's totally unacceptable. The richest nation in the world. Resources should not be an issue. We need to pay our goalkeeper coaches and educator full-time wages. We need to get together, and we need to start adding hourly wages that is similar to any expert, whether it's a pianist, whether it's a psychiatrist, whether, you know, whatever it is. We need to be at that level. We need to get together and we need to unify. And we need to start doing what the fitness coaches did. And what did they do, my friends? They're performance coaches now. They're the right-hand man of head coaches or woman. They've established themselves where the head coach now defers to the performance coach. The goalkeeper coach is usually the last one on a totem pole, usually the last one thought of. You don't have a quality job or earn a good living unless you're tagged along with a winning coach, especially in the international arena. And this is unacceptable. You know why? It's unacceptable because when you ask anyone how important the goalkeeper is to the success of the team, it's crucial. No team wins the championship with an average goalkeeper. You have an average team with an excellent goalkeeper, you're competitive. You have a good team with an average goalkeeper, you're not going to lift that trophy. And this is true. I'm going on a rampage, guys. I'm sorry, but this is But this is true among clubs, academies across this country. How many of them have a full-time goalkeeper director? Very few. Very few. Here in Connecticut, there's one, and they just resigned and went somewhere else. And you know why? They look at the numbers. They say, okay, a team has 25 players. There's only two goalkeepers. How can we justify paying the goalkeeper coach a full-time salary?
I agree.
You justify it by the results that you're going to attain through the quality of training and the attraction of the top goalkeepers in the area who are going to go to that club. And as we all know, parents are willing to pay the extra for quality goalkeeping programs. So these are some of the dissatisfactions that I have, and I'm disappointed. I've been away for a number of years in the international arena. Coming back and returning, I expected that we would be at a better place. And it's not the fault of the goalkeeper coaches. We have the quality in the country. They need to be given the resources and the tools to succeed. You know, if you offer a goalkeeper coach a second best plan, you're going to get second place results. If you offer a goalkeeper coach with the proper resources, first financially, so he doesn't have to juggle all over the place, run all over the place to try to make ends meet, give him the training equipment and the space that's specifically designed for goalkeeping training, we can create magic.
Good points. George, did you have a question?
Danny, I love it. You know, obviously, I've experienced it on my end, but I'll leave that alone. But at the same time, you know, you talked about takeaways, and I believe being a goalkeeper or any player, you're going to take something from each coach. And you mentioned the influence of Kirosh. I was just wondering, what was that nugget? What did he give you that probably really just said, you know what, I got to listen to this guy? And then what did you take in some of your other journeys?
Yeah, great question. And I'm getting emotional with that question because it goes back to a meeting that I had with him in Florida. We were working on Project 2010, U.S. Soccer Commission, Carlos Queiroz and myself, to travel the country and analyze elite football and present a document, which we did. It was, you know, called the Q Report or Project 2010. It's about 120 pages long. And we spoke to everyone, college coaches, high school coaches, parents, administrators, professional coaches, professional players. And we put together this project. And I remember it was a World Cup year and 98. And I was in Florida, and it was around midnight. We were watching games and et cetera. And he asked me to sit down on the couch. I sat down. He started walking back and forth, talking to me until 2 a.m, challenging me if this is truly the career I wanted to proceed. And the sacrifices and the discipline that are required, the persistence that needs to take place. And he had me so laser focused. His passion came across so clearly. But above all, It was attention to detail. I was an American product. What does that mean? You know, a little bit of casual, you know, coaches going out and playing tennis and golfing and having all these different, you know, at the highest levels. And I'm not saying this is wrong and I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying this is the way it is. And this is where we're competing against the rest of the world. It's that obsession. It's that obsession that everything matters administratively, on and off the field, travel plans, hotel plans, training calendarization, periodization, you know, and really the sacrifice that we make on a personal level. Like many of you, I've missed many funerals. I've missed very many weddings. I've missed the graduation of both of my sons from colleges. You know, I just made it to my dad's funeral. Is it right? Is it wrong? As I get older and wiser, I'm in a happier place now because my family is my number one priority. I'm attending all those things that I sacrificed. But this is what we're competing against. We're competing against youth coaches in the international arena who have one mission in mind, and that's to produce a professional player who represents their country. That's what we're competing against. When I go to training sessions, you know, since I've been back, I've been fortunate with the U17, the U20, I've been involved with the US Olympic team, I've been involved with the women's national team. I mean, the lack of intensity, the lack of competitiveness is amazing to me. Overseas, the coach isn't managing the game, it's the players who are making each other accountable. Because everything depends on it. That poor pass, not making the right decision, everybody on that pitch in the international arena depends on it being right, being correct. Once again, you know, we're a nation of combining education and athletics. I believe that's the right way to do it for the future. Because look, how many goalkeepers have we trained in our career, truly, that have become a professional player or a national team player? That doesn't mean we stop coaching. That doesn't mean we start training, because success for me is doing the best you can with the tools that you have and accepting the results. That's the biggest challenge, accepting those results. You know, I had a girl 14 years old the other day, and she wanted to talk to me. You know, the mother was present and she wanted to know if she could play Division I soccer, you know? And I know she has some athletic challenges. Do I stop training her? Absolutely not. Do I stop caring for her? Absolutely not. I believe in a holistic approach. The beauty of this position isn't the professionals that we produce. It's the characters that we build. This position demands every skill to cope with every emotion, through joy, through failure, you know, through success, through victories, you know, through accepting mistakes, learning and growing from those mistakes, having mental skills to overcome failure, because we all know the best goalkeeper in the world is going to concede a goal. The field player at the end of the day wins. You could have that guy, your mate that you're challenging, and you stop them for 3 years, and then you get into your senior year, he beats you one, and that's it, it's over. So I think, you know, when we combine the physical with the technical, with the mental, with the tactical, and it's proportionally different in the different stages of the goalkeeper's career and age specific as we, you know, create that curriculum. So from Carlos Queiroz, it's really that attention to detail. It's that vertical integration. It's that crystal clear plan. Not that it's not dynamic, George. It is. It's always changing. It's always improving, just like our methods are if we're students of the game. But that's what I took from him. I mean, you know, when I started working with him, everything was important. And I said, this is not a big deal. I said internally, I would never tell him. You know, this is not a big deal. And maybe it wasn't, but it's just having that mentality. And sometimes when people work with me, not just with goalkeeping. I'm a product of that now, you know, and sometimes I do overthink situations, and sometimes I overanalyze situations as a result of my journey with him. And I'm trying to do better with that. But I do think I think it makes a difference. It's 24/7 in the international arena, and our elite level coaches and those who aspire to be professional players need to understand that, need to accept that responsibility.
Dan, I like the point about idea about, facing these challenges and kids that aren't as competitive. I think we do our kids a big injustice by, at an older age, removing adversity. Rather, we should keep the adversity, but school them, train them to say, okay, well, you're giving up a goal. What are you going to do now? Instead of removing the, I say, okay, well, you're not starting. Okay, well, we'll find you another team. Instead of saying, you're not starting, what are you going to do about it? And I think we don't allow our kids the opportunity. And again, the parents have the best intentions, but we all know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. It's an old Boston band, The Neighborhoods. But by removing that, we don't allow the kids to grow in the direction that you've just mentioned.
We hope you enjoyed that episode at the Goalkeeper Roundtable. If you'd like to reach out with suggestions, comments, or questions, all of our email addresses are available in the show description. If you like the show, we'd love for you to subscribe to it, but also share it in social media platforms or with any other goalkeeper or coach who may find value in it. We hope you turn in to the next Goalkeeper Roundtable.